Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much for coming in today to listen to us for our quarterly market talk. We want to go ahead and review the first quarter of 2023. We'll go ahead and kind of introduce our planning team. Myself, John Davila. We also have Jeff Cochin, Adam Kadivar, and Heather Corley. They all make up our professional planning team for our clients. What we want to do is just kind of give a quick recap of our last quarterly talk, which was on December 1st of 2022. And, you know, at that time, environment still was providing uncertainty and volatility. Interest rate hikes were accelerating, and they had increases of 75 basis points. We thought that we may have hit peak inflation, and inflation data continued to show inflation coming down, but slowing down the rate of deceleration. Additionally, you know, through the end of last year, 2023 proved to be an incredibly tough year for equity investors in the stock market, with returns of almost negative 20% for the year. But particularly, the investors were slammed by the bond market, which had its worst annual return in generation, to the tune of down 14% for the year. So things that, well, since then, since the end of last year, we still have a positive trend on inflation decelerating. So we're now down to 5% from the high of 9.1% in June. So we're trending in the right direction, but the rate of deceleration is slowing. Interest rates are still trending negative. The Fed rate is up to 5%. And that's up from 0.5% in 2022. And it's the highest rate since December of 2027. So interest rates have gone up dramatically, very quickly. And we're expecting another rate hike here next month. So that is still trending in a negative direction. GDP numbers still have not come out for quarter, although fourth quarter GDP in Q4 was up 2.5, just a little bit over 2.5%. However, it was down from the 3.2% in Q3. Jobs, we're still adding jobs. 236,000 jobs were created in March of 2023. And then markets surprisingly have been resilient. Markets, the S&P to start the year, up 7%, NASDAQ up over 16%, the Dow, which is more value-based, up over 2.25%, and the bond market is up 2% for the year. So with everything being very, very challenging in the economy, we've still had a pretty resilient market through the first part of the year. Reasons for pessimism: we still have high inflation. We still have uncertainty as to how high the Fed will raise rates. We still have challenges in the economy ahead. And now with earnings season starting, large banks have increased their default loan reserves. And that kind of aligns with the general thought that we will go into recession 2023. Reasons for optimism. Well, historically, coming off a down market, we have the higher probability of us having a positive year in the markets. And the market showed resiliency in Q1, returning 7% for the quarter, the ag returning 2%. And when this typically happens, we've ended the year positive. Another note, so far in the cycle, the low has been October 12 of 2022. So we're about 7 months away from where that low was set during this cycle. And so the S&P is up 16% since then. And we accomplished that even though we've had rates, high inflation, fear, uncertainty, and also, you know, this crisis of banks with Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank of New York, and the regional banks, who are not mandated to do the stress testing. So those are just kind of general thoughts as we roll in. So we'll go ahead and get thoughts from Adam or Jeff, whoever wants to go next, and then we'll cap it off with questions. And by the way, you can always submit a question through the chat, and then we'll address at the end.
Okay, great. Thanks, John. As John alluded to, there's been a lot of news and talk about the health of U.S. banks the last couple months, particularly the regional banks, which are smaller in nature and have fewer dollars in deposits than the large, quote unquote, too big to fail banks like J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, and Wells Fargo, among others. While what happened with Silicon Valley Bank last month was disturbing and made pretty big headlines, it might not be as bad as you would think. While there was a run on the bank and it had a few problems paying out depositors, it wasn't because they didn't have the collateral to back those deposits. It was because they mismanaged their bond portfolios. So SVB had large positions in long-term bonds, high-duration bonds, which had dropped in value significantly in 2022 because of the large increase in interest rates. Remember, as interest rates rise, bond prices go down. The longer term the bond, the higher the duration, and the higher the price sensitivity to interest rates. And as Silicon Bank was trying to pay the money out to their depositors, they had to sell out of their long-term bonds at losses. This was not sustainable since those bonds were trading at deep discounts to par because of the increase in interest rates last year. In the end, the government came in as a backstop to protect all the deposits and created an emergency lending facility to make sure banks have enough cash to meet the needs of their depositors. That way, banks don't have to sell their bonds at losses to raise cash. They can just borrow money from the Fed at very low interest rates to meet those depositor demands as needed. Again, it was not that Silicon Valley Bank didn't have the collateral to meet their depositor needs. It's just that the assets they held on the books were in 5 to 10 year treasuries that had lost value because of interest rates. It was a mismatch of assets and liabilities. This is very different than the financial crisis in 2007 and 8, when the bonds that the banks held were complete junk backed by mortgage bonds that were almost completely worthless. And Warren Buffett talked about this yesterday or last week. He said, quote unquote, "People shouldn't be worried about losing the money and deposits they have in an American bank. And today they have no reason to worry." He pretty much just said if that there were any more liquidity issues at banks like we saw last month, the Fed would come in and make everyone whole, which is almost certainly will be the case. The same banking liquidities that we saw this spring, if we see ongoing liquidity issues this spring and summer, the same protections that were given to Silicon Valley Bank will be given to those banks too.
Good stuff, Adam.
Thanks, John.
Okay, well, that's pretty interesting comparing it to 2007, 2008, and making sure that, our clients understand that the situation is not the same. Going back to 2007, 2008, there was a lot of bad debt instruments that were sold as investment grade instruments. And so when the banks had bought them back in 2007, 2008, right, and those what collateralized debt obligations started to show their true value from mortgage defaults and whatnot, it hurt the entire market and the banking system back in 07, 08. So thanks for that clarification, Adam. Something that I wanted to touch on, it's not so much about the stock market, it's more in line with planning. And one of the reports that recently came out that I always like to keep tabs on is how Social Security and Medicare funding is holding up. And so it changed a little bit from last year's forecast. But the interesting information is that Social Security is projected to be depleted by 2033. Okay. That means all of the cash reserves that we have in Social Security will have been spent down between now and then. Okay. So that's a bit of a scary proposition, right, for retirees who are relying on that income to subsidize their expenses. And it's concerning for those of us who are working and paying into Social Security, and we're looking at these numbers, if we're informed, and we're saying, well, why are we paying 7% into something that's not going to be there for us? You know, so the reason why I wanted to bring this to the forefront is because, you know, you have a voice, right? And as politicians are running their platforms, you know, you need to start paying attention, all of us do, on the platforms that they're talking about specifically to Social Security and even Medicare. Because Medicare, while it currently has a surplus, it's actually still projected to be fully depleted by 2031. So Medicare looks good on the surface, but when you do a deeper dive, it's escalating at a depleting level faster than Social Security. And so 2031, that's a scary number, you know, because I know a lot of our retirees rely on Medicare, you know, to cover their health expenses in retirement. So again, I go back to the whole political conversation. Doesn't matter if you're left or right, middle, it doesn't matter. These issues need to start being addressed. And it's not going to be popular. It's going to be considered political suicide, you know, trying to address these issues. You know, what we will do later on in the year is we'll actually do a Social Security presentation, more focused on specifics. But, you know, looking at these numbers, it's telling me we need to make change now before it's too late. So I would heed everyone to pay attention to that, stay informed. You know, working with TWG, we're going to keep you informed as to what's going on with Social Security and Medicare. We may not talk about it in every single meeting that we have with you guys, but it will be part of the conversation, you know, as we're going through the motions of planning and whatnot. How do we fix this problem might be some of the questions, you know, some of the solutions that have been pitched by politicians is, hey, we can raise taxes, right? Nobody likes hearing it, but it is part of, you know, the solution formula. You could raise ages on when recipients qualify to receive the benefits, right? So we've already seen full retirement age inching up, right, in latter years to start taking it. I don't think they're going to come in, you know, I can't say this with certainty, but I don't think they're going to come in and say, we're going to take benefits away from those already receiving. I think they're going to look at the workforce and make adjustments to those who are still working. I think that's more likely of a proponent, but they can do whatever they want, right? It's the government. So just wanted to keep you guys apprised of that, and we'll keep you informed. Thanks.
Okay, so we have about 15 minutes for questions. If you have questions, you can submit them through the chat.
Do you have the chat open?
Yes.
Okay.
And also, if you have questions about your individual portfolio or any questions that you want to address, we can always schedule a follow-up meeting.
Yes.
Okay, while we wait for questions, just want to kind of give you a few updates or a few announcements. If you haven't yet been reviewing our monthly newsletter, you're going to find that we added a station in there for client service and client operations. So this will be a lot of FAQs that our client service team headed by Heather have found over the years that are just general questions that clients call in on. We're going to try to update that content more regularly for you and for your usefulness. That way you can get questions answered 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And with that, the website actually has been updated as well. So you can go to www.twgwealthplanning.com and check out the updates.
Okay, doesn't look like any questions are coming in on this session. So with that, we'll let everyone go and have a great week. And if you have any questions and you want to set up meetings with us, please let us know.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you for being here today.
Hey, John.
Hold on.